Hello and welcome to the Africa Today podcast from the BBC at 15:30 GMT on Monday, 26th April. I'm Paul Bachibinga. In the pod today, Omar el-Bashir wins Sudan's national presidential vote as Salva Kiir Mayor Dit comes first in the south. How credible are the results? The world's largest diamond miner, De Beers, puts a cap on production levels to sustain prices. And a local ban on screenings of a pay TV station in northern Kenya is criticized by the central government.
It is totally unbelievable that in Kenya today, anybody can go and stop people watching football in a hall.
So, it might not be a surprise, but at least it's now official. President Omar el-Bashir has been declared winner of Sudan's national presidential vote with 68% of votes cast. And Salva Kiir Mayardit of the SPLM party has clinched the presidency of South Sudan with an overwhelming majority. The results of Sudan's general election were announced by the country's National Elections Commission in Khartoum. The vote, which took place over a five-day period earlier this month, was Sudan's first contested multi-party election in 25 years. The BBC's correspondent in Khartoum is James Kopno. My colleague Sophie Kenye asked him if there were any surprises.
No, I think some of the surprises are probably going to come in the parliamentary elections, some of the elections for governors, which are taking place, which are being released throughout the course of this evening. But I think the President Bashir's victory by 68%, as you said, was very much as people expected. And Salva Kiir's utter dominance of the south also, I think, underscores how these elections really turned into a parade, both for President Bashir and his party in the north and for Salva Kiir and the SPLM in the south.
Has President Bashir given his reaction to this result?
Yes, he went on state television almost as soon as the results would have been released. He talked about a moral victory for the Sudanese people in the eyes of the world because he said that they conducted themselves in a very civilized way, a high-class way during these polls, which, of course, there were no major incidents of violence. And he also said significantly that the referendum that's due to be held in January of next year on possible southern independence would happen as scheduled. And that was a clear attempt to set southern minds at ease because there had been fears that President Bashir would attempt to delay the referendum.
Has there been any reaction from any of the other candidates yet?
Yes, certainly. Well, for example, Abdallah Deng Niall, who was one of the opposition figures who decided to contest the polls against President Bashir, called these elections fraudulent. He said he didn't recognise the results. And another, Mubarak El-Fadl, who actually decided to boycott these elections, also rejected the figures. He said that he and other opposition party figures want new elections next year after the referendum. They want a complete renewal of the democratic process, and they're going to call on people from civil society, from trade unions and so on, to join them in a great campaign, he said, to try and get elections next year, and really a complete rerun of this entire process, because he and others, he says, rejects the results of these polls.
James Kopno in Khartoum. Well, Sudan's elections were quite a complex affair. The Sudanese were electing a national president, a southern president, as well as members of parliament and state governors. The vote was marred by boycotts from a number of opposition parties and allegations of irregularities. International observers gave conflicting assessments of the process. The African Union gave it a clean bill of health, but the European Union and the Carter Center said it fell short of international standards. Pagan Amum is the Secretary General of the SPLM party. On the line to Juba, Sophie Kenye asked him for his reaction to today's results.
Well, despite the fact that Mr. Yasser Arman, the SPLM presidential candidate, boycotted elections as by a decision of the SPLM leadership, he even went and proceeded to be voted in by the majority of the people of Southern Sudan, not less than 92%, and also by the people outside the country and in Blue Nile and on Southern Kordofan. And as I said, there has been irregularities and widespread allegation of rigging in favor of President Bashir. But in Southern Sudan, he got less than 4% of the over 3 million votes casted.
So another 4 years of President Bashir, is it a good or bad thing given his indictment by the ICC?
Well, I believe the indictment is still in books. Elections the way they were mad would not help President Bashir to be out of the books of ICC. I believe the only way out is to have a just end to the conflict in Darfur through a peace settlement that will do justice. And yes, President Bashir will have 4 years, but for the people of Southern Sudan, it will be 8 months under President Bashir, and that the majority of Southern Sudanese do not see President Bashir now as their president, as they did not vote for him. The signals are clear that they will not be under President Bashir for that long.
Now, the president has just promised that the referendum will be done on time. Are you confident of this?
This is a positive statement by Bashir, but he has to follow that with real actions. He has made promises in the last 5 years, which he did not follow with concrete steps of implementation. What is needed now is for President Bashir to immediately demarcate the border, I mean his government that he will form, to demarcate the border immediately. We would like to see that what he's saying he's doing by establishing the referendum commission for Southern Sudan and the referendum commission for Abyei, and providing support to that commission to organize a credible internationally monitored referendum. It is only when he takes those steps that we can believe him.
Secretary General of the SPLM party, Pagan Amum. So, the results of Sudan's national and southern presidential elections come as little surprise. And as the outcome of the governorship polls continues to trickle in, it's worth asking whether it was worth all the effort. Dr. Douglas Johnson is an analyst on Sudan. On the line to the BBC studio in Oxford, Sophie Kenye asked him what he made of the results.
Well, I've only seen the barest of figures, and know they're not surprising given the way in which the election was conducted and the boycott of the major parties in the north.
Is 68% representative of the will of the people of Sudan for al-Bashir?
I think that that's unlikely. What you've got to remember is that that is 68% of the votes cast, not necessarily 68% of the registered voters. And also, I think one thing that is significant about the final voter for the presidency is that from the reports that I have already seen, very few Southerners voted for al-Bashir as president and continued to vote for the SPLM candidate Yasser Arman, even though he had withdrawn.
How much credibility do the results really have?
Well, I would say that it has very limited credibility, considering those criticisms that were leveled before the vote and the reports that have come out of fraud and coercion, both in the northern states of the Sudan and in the southern states of the Sudan.
And what will they do for the personal credibility of Omar al-Bashir, who, of course, has an arrest warrant hanging over his head from the ICC?
Well, I don't think that this improves his credibility within the Sudan. There wasn't a free and fair election for presidency. For instance, former Prime Minister Sadiq al-Mahdi was prevented from giving a radio broadcast when he was running for president because he insisted on speaking about the ICC warrant. So you can't say that there was a free and fair election, and those persons who were effectively disenfranchised will not necessarily feel that Bashir has any greater credibility now than he did before the elections.
Now, Sudanese were voting for not only national leaders but also state governors. Any surprises in these elections? For example, in the south, where some members of the SPLM stood as independent candidates, to see some surprises?
I'm not quite sure that there have been some surprises. I will say this, though. Up until now, the governors of states or provinces in the Sudan have been appointed by the central government. This is the first time that governors of states have been answerable to and responding to their local constituency. That will make it impossible, or at least very difficult, for the president of the nation or the president of the South Sudan to interfere in state politics by removing governors unilaterally, which they were able to do up until now. So I think that that is a very great difference. It has the potential for changing the political landscape of the Sudan by giving politicians a chance to build up local constituencies and be political forces in their own right because of the support they have from their people.
Sudan analyst Douglas Johnson. Kenya's Information Minister Samuel Poghisio has expressed shock at the banning of public screenings of a pay TV, DSTV, by Islamic leaders in northeastern Kenya. The channel mainly shows live football matches. Sheikhs in the town of Mandera that borders Kenya and Ethiopia have accused DSTV, which also has movie channels, of corrupting young football fans. The religious leaders say they will not allow any viewing of football matches, including the upcoming Football World Cup, in public places. The information minister, however, says the move by Islamic leaders is unacceptable. He's been speaking to the BBC's Muliro Telewa.
It is totally unbelievable that in Kenya today, anybody can go and stop people watching football in a hall unless they can prove that crime was committed in there, in which case I would not be interested. I'm interested more in the freedoms that people have, in the capacity of football to unite us and the capacity of football to be a form of entertainment. And you can now begin to take us back. So I'm following up on this matter and hope that this is not an issue that you'll continue to hear about in Kenya.
If it's true, as the Minister for Information, what will you do?
Well, first of all, the people who are purported to have closed these places are not licensed to close these places. Any cleric, what business would he have closing those premises? Any chief? We have got district commissioners, we have got DOs, we've got district commissioners, we've got provincial commissioners, and those are the people I want to consult with to find out what really transpired in Mandera. We are hearing the same things that are appearing on the media about Somalia. There must be a difference between us and Somalia.
Do you think maybe the influence or our proximity to Somalia could be contributing to this wave of thinking among the religious leaders and maybe some of the government officials?
I'm not in the position to commit the government in any of these issues at the moment because I am yet to investigate. I'm yet to find out what really transpired in Mandera. And as soon as I find out what really transpired in Mandera, I will then be in position to issue a statement that's more committing. And because this information has not been corroborated yet at the levels that I've talked about, it's important for us to say right now that it is not possible that in Kenya today we can stop people who are watching football unless in that context there was crime committed and therefore it was a police case or there was reason to believe that that was not just an ordinary place where football is watched.
Kenya's Information Minister Samuel Poghisio speaking to Muliro Telewa. The world's largest diamond miner, De Beers, says diamond production will not return to pre-recession levels for some time. The firm, which employs almost 16,000 people, has operations in several African states and is partly owned by the government of Botswana. There's speculation the price of diamonds will rise as production fails to keep up with demand. Here's our business reporter, Rob Young.
The global financial crisis dramatically affected worldwide sales of diamonds, so mines were closed down and jobs lost. Botswana, one of the biggest producers of diamonds, was hit particularly hard. But now the global economy is recovering, and as China and India get richer, the swelling ranks of the wealthy in those countries are buying more and more diamonds. One of the big four miners, De Beers, says it expects production this year to rise by 30% compared to 2009. It's also predicted to increase next year as well. But the firm says it does not expect production to return to the levels it was at before the global economic downturn for some time, maybe several years. That's partly because some mines are yet to start operating again. The Damshar facility in Botswana, for example, is not due to reopen at all this year. There's also been an overall reduction in the number of people working for mining firms. De Beers shed almost a quarter of its workforce in 2009. If the demand for diamonds continues to increase but supply fails to match it, that may well have an impact on the price of the diamonds. It's already one of the most profitable mining sectors. It may be about to get even more so.
The BBC's Rob Young reporting. That's it for today. Thank you for downloading the Africa Today podcast from the BBC, recorded weekdays at 15:30 GMT. You can also listen to our programs via our website at bbcworldservice.com/Africa. I'm Paul Bachbinger. Until next time, goodbye.